for America.
Do I want to send one of my sons or your son to fight to regain Mosul? Who should want to stop them more? Maybe the people who live there.
There are a lot of groups out there that probably have more advanced immediate plans directed against the United States.
Fighting for Idaho.
Pride is an important celebration for the LGBT community. It's important to be out and be proud of who you are and be safe in your community and show everyone that we're part of Boise.
Fighting for you.
Portugal scored a devastating goal to tie the game.
Team USA settling for a 2-2 draw.
We're Team USA. We're going all the way.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. You know, the best laid plans of mice and men were waiting for Ed Klein. We'll have to call his booker to make sure that Ed joins us. And I've known Ed for years. But his new book, The Clintons and the Obamas, it's more than a political rivalry. It's a blood feud. And we have booked Ed Klein to be on this program. And we will get him as soon as he's available. And that's really sad that, unfortunately, whether it's Ed, whether it's the booking agency, I mean, these things happen, but, you know, every second counts on these interviews because, quite frankly, that we've gotten Ed Klein is great. Ray did an outstanding job on this. And he's just one of those friendly, professional guys. And what was it, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, one of his first big books was The Amateur, which was about Barack Obama, and it was about Obama's amateurish way of campaigning. And like I said, we'll work on that. And I know what you're saying, Kevin. You've pulled a bait and switch on us. How dare you? Well, no, usually Ed's very reliable, and we'll make sure that we get him on as soon as he's available. But, and by the way, you know, I was just talking to Linda, our outstanding young lady at the front desk. And I said, Linda, make sure that you listen because Ed Klein is coming on and everybody's buzzing about Ed Klein. And we've known Ed for years. Great book on Katie Couric if you want to know the real skinny on that big phony. Or, as we've said, his books on the Kennedys and everyone else. And he joins us now. Ed Klein, welcome back with Kevin Miller.
Kevin, it's a great pleasure to be back with you after all this time.
You know, I wondered what you're up to, and then all of a sudden, blazing all over the internet, Drudge, it's Blood Feud.
Yes, Blood Feud, The Clintons versus the Obamas is my new book. It's already number 3 on Amazon's top 100 bestsellers, and it's passed Hillary's book a long time ago. And I think the reason for this, quite frankly, Kevin, is that up to now, there's been an awful lot written about the feud between the Tea Party and the Republican Party and the establishment part of the Republican Party, like that's the only story. But in fact, there's an even bigger feud going on between the two big Democratic families, the Clintons and the Obamas.
Ed Klein, you've been blowing it up everywhere with your revelations from Blood Feud, now Amazon number 3, available everywhere. How do you get this stuff? I always ask you this. Everybody asks you this. But if the stuff weren't true, they'd get you. So it has to be true. How do you find out about Hillary's bad heart or Bill Clinton and Obama's golf game? You weren't there.
No, I wasn't there. But I certainly interviewed people who either were there or were told by the principals, meaning the Obamas or the Clintons, what went on. So, you know, I've been a journalist for more years than I care to remember, and I've been following Hillary and the Obamas now for many, many years. I've got a huge Rolodex of sources. And people ask me, well, why, knowing what you've written in the past, why do they talk to you? And there are really two reasons. One, people love to boast about their access to the president, the first lady, the Clintons, the queens and kings of this world. It makes them more important in their own eyes and the eyes of others. So they talk. And the other reason is they want to get their side of the story out. So if you go to somebody who doesn't like what you've written but still thinks, well, I've got a chance to at least get some of my ideas in Klein's book, they will talk to you.
Okay, Ed Klein here, author of Blood Feud at 580 KIDO. Let me try and be original. How has President Obama changed from the amateur who you covered initially?
It's a really good question, Kevin, because I've changed my mind a little bit about that since I wrote the book, The Amateur. In addition to being an amateur, which means he's inexperienced and he's not suited for, you know, the give and take of politics, there's something very immature about this guy. Here's what I mean. If you're a baby, you're young, you're a little kid, if you wish for something, you think you're entitled to get it because you just want it. That's Obama. He gives these speeches. He wants something. He doesn't think he needs to work for it. He doesn't think he needs to do horse trading with Congress to get it. It's just because I, Obama, want it, and I'm entitled to it. And that's a huge streak of immaturity in the guy who is in our White House and supposedly is the leader of the free world.
Ed Klein with us, 580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Last time we talked, Michelle gave Oprah the boot and had some jokes. Now we've got her and Valerie Jarrett, according to Blood Feud, Ed Klein, reinventing the term mean girls about Hillary Clinton.
That's right. You know, at night, Valerie Jarrett, who is the most important advisor in the White House, best friends to both the president and the first lady, she disappears from the West Wing and goes into the elevator and upstairs to the residence. And that's why her nickname in the White House is the Night Stalker, because she at night disappears into the residence where she has dinner with the Obamas, only official who does, and knows the Malia and Sasha and Malia, and then spends the evenings very often sharing a bottle of Chardonnay wine with Michelle, talking about and gossiping about people they don't like. And first among that list is Hillary Clinton, who they've nicknamed Hildebeest after the menacing new GNU, the new that roams the Serengeti in Africa.
I don't know even how you got that one, Ed Klein, but what's the...
Well, I'll tell you how I got it. Valerie Jarrett's told several of her friends that that's exactly what the nickname they call her, call Hillary, and I interviewed those friends.
Yeah, well, I'm sure your computers are bugged and everything else now for you, buddy.
That's right. I'm wondering about this phone call. Maybe the National Security Agency is tapping into our call.
Hopefully they'll buy some books.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Ed Klein, let's continue on. What is the First Lady really like? You've really spent a lot of time studying her and the president. We have an idea of what he's about, but what about her? We have this. We have the media's propaganda about her. Then we have the real Michelle. What's she like?
Well, you know, the original Michelle, when Barack first ran for president, was the same Michelle who referred to his stinky socks, his bad breath in the morning. She's the one who told Jody Cantor, a reporter for the New York Times, that when she sees Obama, her husband, behind the Resolute desk, that's the famous desk in the White House, in the Oval Office, what are you doing there? You don't belong there. I mean, she's a caustic, sarcastic, put-down artist. And Oprah Winfrey has told her friends that one of the things she can't stand is being around Obama and Michelle when Michelle is constantly putting down her husband, the president. That's her character. That's her personality. She's got that kind of, sour look upon life. And that Michelle is carefully hidden by her public relations people in the East Wing of the White House, which has they've portrayed her as this, you know, anti-obesity campaign, loves kids and green food and does mom dancing with Jimmy Fallon and that kind of stuff. But that's not the real Michelle. The real Michelle is the one who's constantly putting down her husband.
Let's get to the Clintons and the Obamas. Particularly troubling in your book, Blood Feud, Ed Klein, is Hillary Clinton's reaction to Benghazi and Bill Clinton's role into trying to smooth out the roughness despite his own reservations about the president.
What happened there is that during the attack on our consulate in Benghazi, Hillary was in the State Department monitoring it moment by moment. She got periodic updates from David Petraeus, the head of the CIA, from Tom Donilon, the National Security Advisor, and even from a guy named Hicks, who was the deputy ambassador in Libya. So she was one of the most knowledgeable officials in Washington that this was, from the start, a terrorist attack, and she knew it. But then at 10 o'clock that night, during the attack that was still going on, she got a phone call from the president. And he, according to my sources, told her that he wanted her to put out a official State Department statement saying that this attack was caused by a video and was spontaneous and wasn't a terrorist attack. And she was appalled. She called Bill Clinton, her husband, who was then in Little Rock, and told him what the president said. And they didn't, you know, they knew that this wasn't true. They considered her resigning as Secretary of State and then realized that if she did, Democrats would never forgive her for hurting Obama's chances for re-election. So she went along with this lie, knowing it was a lie. And she was an enthusiastic liar about it. And now she's saying, well, I didn't know, and, you know, I wasn't kept up to date. That's not true. She was totally up to date. And a good friend of mine says that the Clintons, given the opportunity to tell the truth or tell a lie, on more occasions than not, they'll choose to lie.
And yet you have Bill Clinton making this deal with Obama to help Hillary Clinton. You have the golf game. You have Obama reluctant to embrace Bill Clinton, and yet I don't get how Bill Clinton campaigned for the president during the 2012 election.
It was a definite political calculation. They had a golf game, excuse me, in September of 2011, almost a year before the Democratic National Convention. Obama's poll ratings were in the basement. He looked like he might lose re-election. He reached out to Bill Clinton for help. Clinton realized he had some leverage, and he said, okay, I'll help you. You know, this is politicians talking now. If in return, in 2016, you come out and support Hillary for president. And that was the deal they struck during this golf game at Andrews Air Force Base, which has, you know, two or three big golf courses. After he won election, Obama reneged on the deal. And this has infuriated Bill Clinton. And ever since then, he's been taking pot shots at Barack Obama at every opportunity.
It's amazing that you detail in your book about a dinner and that Obama rudely disses the former president when he's speaking.
Well, he does. You know, Bill has said on more than one occasion that the Obamacare is a law that is a flawed law. I mean, this is Bill Clinton knocking Obamacare and that it needs to be fixed. He said that he and Hillary have both said that the IRS scandal is a legitimate scandal, which flies in the face of what the White House is saying and trying to cover up. Bill Clinton is not going to be a friend of Barack Obama's for the last 2 years of Obama's term, believe me. And he's told Hillary, according to my sources, on numerous occasions that when she runs for president, which she has every intention of doing, that she has to put some air between herself and Obama and convince people that she's not going to be a continuation of the Obama policies, but that she's going to be the more effective, professional, experienced hand on the tiller, and that basically she's promising a third term for the Clintons, not for the Obamas.
Ed Klein, please stand by. We'll get you out by 8:30 our time, 10:30 yours. Quickly now to traffic. Kevin Miller, 580
KIDO. Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Ed Klein with us, author of Blood Feud here at 580 KIDO. Ed, going back to your book, a couple things here. Number one, you have Charlize Theron, picture with Bill Clinton, a big-time movie actress, beautiful star, saying, quote, I've told him that that when we're back in the White House, he'll have to behave, said Hillary. What do you make of that one? Is Bill Clinton behaving?
Well, you know, That's a good question. According to Hillary, and I quote her from many sources who have been around her when she said this, he still has a lot of life left in him, quote unquote, meaning that he still likes the ladies. He still likes to be with them. Hillary, of course, doesn't admit or say that Bill goes any further than just being around them. I, quite frankly, did not. I decided in this book not to get into his sexual life because I thought that would overwhelm all the more important issues in this book. And I didn't get into anybody's sexual orientation and blah, blah, blah. It seems to me that we're beyond that now. Where we are is people claiming that the Republicans are split between the Tea Party and the establishment, but would, in fact, the future of this country and the Democratic Party rests in this huge blood feud between the Clintons and the Obamas, and that's the important story.
Ed Klein, whether people like Hillary or Bill Clinton or not, especially Bill Clinton, he's an astute, above average, perhaps the best politician we've seen in our lifetime. Does he feel it's his duty, his legacy, to bring back the Clinton White House and pretty much eviscerate the Obama legacy?
It's a great question because, you know, we have a 22nd Amendment that was passed in 1947 that says no one can serve more than two terms as president of the United States. Bill Clinton has served two terms. Basically, what he's doing is what Vladimir Putin has done in the Soviet Union. He's trying to get around this law by getting Hillary elected president, but that is, in effect, also re-electing Bill Clinton, two for the price of one, in the White House. We know that. We know if Hillary is president, Bill's going to be right there in the White House, whispering in her ear and being very influential. And I think that this is not something that we want to do, go back to the Clinton era with all the terrible things that we forget happened during then, not the least of which, Kevin, one last point, is that during the Clinton time in office, he ignored the terrorist threat to the United States. He did nothing about it except a couple of missiles in Afghanistan that went nowhere. I think it would be a huge mistake to have the Clintons back in the White House.
Fascinating read, Blood Feud. The author, Ed Klein, with us at 580KIDO. Going to a quote from Bill Clinton, "I have to do all I can to prepare the campaign playbooks," Bill Clinton said, "but I have to accept the fact that if I fall by the wayside, you have to continue without me and make a positive thing out of it." Most people in Bill Clinton's age would be hanging out with the grandkids. What drives him, and your thoughts behind that statement that you have in your book?
I think Bill Clinton would die trying to get back into the White House. I mean, I think that's his most important thing. And, in fact, he said to Hillary in the presence of several people, a couple of whom I spoke to, that if I should die, I want you to put on your widow's weeds, your black clothes, and exploit my death because my death is going to be the equivalent of 2 million votes for you for president. I mean, that's Bill Clinton, the politician, talking even beyond the grave.
Ed Klein, how healthy is Hillary?
Well, it's hard to say because I called her doctor, Alan Schwartz, who's her cardiologist. And naturally, the doctor decided not to talk to me because it's confidential. But according to what Hillary's friends have been told by Bill and Hillary, she has a heart valve problem. It was a consideration of having heart valve replacement surgery. They decided not to do that, but that she had to be monitored carefully for the rest of her life. And none of this has been made public until my book came out, Blood Feud. And I think it is incumbent upon Hillary Clinton to release her medical records fully, not just two or three pages of summary, but the whole thing, so that the American public can decide what they think about her appropriateness to run for president.
Ed Klein with us. Two final quick questions. Number one, we know what's going to happen after the election with the Clintons, what they're going to be doing. What's the future for the Obamas post-White House?
Well, there's a lot of talk about Barack Obama setting up a foundation like Bill Clinton's. There's talk in the White House among the Obama people about how he would like to continue to be the head of the Democratic Party. But, you know, if there's another Democratic president, that president, if it's Hillary or anybody else, is going to automatically replace him. And that's something he doesn't want. He's not eager to see Hillary in the White House. As far as the Michelle is concerned, she's talking about running for Senate from Illinois. That's a possibility. And she and Valerie Jarrett have also talked about, believe it or not, and this comes from a couple of sources, spending a lot of time in Spain and France and just living there, just the two of them, separate from Barack Obama, because they love Spain and France. And, you know, writing a book and doing some speeches and being on boards of directors and things like that. I think they will have the Obamas a very separate life after the White House.
Ed Klein, I know we're up against it. I got to quickly get to this question. What's the fixation with NBC to become the official propaganda network of the Obamas, whether it's Jimmy Fallon, Brian Williams, or anyone else? They seem to be the arm, the PR arm of the White House.
Yeah, and just the way the New York Times seems to be the PR arm of the White House as far as print newspapers are concerned. It's a terrible trend in journalism where major outlets like NBC and the New York Times become the stalking dogs, the walking dogs, the running dogs of the Democratic Party. And I think they're hurting their own credibility. We see, for instance, that latest polls show that people have very little faith in journalists these days. They're right down there with the Congress, and it's only their own fault for not doing their right job, which is to hold all people, Democrats and Republicans, responsible for the behavior.
Ed Klein, Blood Feud, good to have you back, my friend.
It's been great to talk to you, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Take care now. There we have it. Ed Klein's got to catch a plane. Your thoughts on the exclusive interview that we had? Remember, you may have seen Ed Klein on Drudge, on the New York Post, but we had him here, right here, with you, Kevin Miller and me, at 580KIDO. Coming up next, the IRS versus the Congress. Big fireworks last night in Eagle about the roundabout. And should smoking be banned in Garden City bars and restaurants? All that before Glenn Beck. We've got a lot to do. Let's get started. 580KIDO.
On Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
You're not the mayor. You killed my parents. I'm Batman. There's something else you have that I want.
Wait till they get a load of me.
Mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it.
Merry Christmas, Alvin.
25 years ago, the number one movie in America. Who would have ever thought Michael Keaton? Until Christian Bale, the defining Batman of our time. Ah, young Kim Basinger with her big blonde hair. The Joker before Heath Ledger. Prince running amok. A simpler time, true believers. Before computer animation. Before all those other things. You know, I was watching this new show on AMC. It's called Halt and Catch Fire. And the reason why it reminds me of the Batman series is that it's about the computer age in the early 80s. Now, I know what you're going to say. Kevin Miller, the early 80s, and it's weird how looking at those old computers, and I believe it's set in 1983, but these big, bulky PCs, and really what they've done is they've tried to clone an IBM computer, which, how does everybody do it? They get around things. They break laws by, buying something and then reverse engineering it. And I'm sitting there watching it. Okay, I got rid of the gooey, mushy stuff. But I'm sitting there watching this going, wow, how much we've changed in the last, 20, 30 years since the PC? Now, I mean, when people go to work, it's not with your hands, it's with your keyboards. Walt in Nampa, not an Emmett at 580KIDO.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Living the dream.
Good. This is an excellent interview with Klein. He has sold a book, for sure. It's going to be interesting reading about Hilder Beast.
He's an amazing guy, and I mean, he did a number on the Kennedys, he did a number on Obama, he did a great book that didn't get a lot of attention about Katie Couric. He also has done one on Hillary Clinton as well. He's a brilliant guy.
Yes, he is. Anyway, Where are we at on Common Core in the state of Idaho?
Where are we at? We have the conservatives saying we're not going to take it, and no one. Well, we couldn't get rid of it because Timmy was head of the state education committee. So Common Core lives, although the conservative elements, if they're not squashed in the general election, will probably make another run at it in the legislature if there's a new chairman of the education committee, I believe. But I believe if you really want to get rid of Common Core, you don't go to Glenn Beck's movie. You put pressure on your legislators until they capitulate.
Yes, that's. I was kind of wondering where we were at because I've heard several things going on, depending on what radio station you're listening to and what commentator, about you know, how wonderful it is, how bad it is, etc.
You talk to the educators, as we have, they love it.
Yeah, I noticed. Well, they love anything that perpetuates their existence.
Hey, man, who doesn't? You got to eat.
I was listening to various governors around the country who were signing bills saying, go away. We've had enough.
So anyway, that really comes down, though, to the level of conservatism. And to my great conservative brethren that join us every Saturday morning here, and Walt, you're always welcome if you want to make the drive in to join the All-Star panel.
Where is it at?
At the radio station.
Oh, downtown Boise?
Yeah. Park Center, right over by the Ram.
I never go into Boise.
Well, you know, you're missing out.
No, I'm not.
But as I tell them when they say, well, what about Indiana? What about South Carolina? And I got to, this ain't Indiana. This ain't South Carolina. There's a more libertarian vibe here than you have in some social conservative strongholds like the Deep South. It's just a political reality.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have a good Papa John's there, buddy.
Idaho is different than anywhere else, and Boise is definitely different. You know, a lot of Boise would fit perfectly well in California.
Well, fit well in Portland. Thank you, Walt. Quickly to, oh, just the bell of the ball, Tea Party Bob at 580KIDO.
Morning, Kevin. How are you today?
Already missing you in a heterosexually appropriate way.
I love the interview with Klein. I think that was just terrific.
He's no Tea Party Bob.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's kind of funny that the timing, he brings his book out just after Hillary brings hers out. I wonder who's going to sell more copies.
He's already killing it. She's out of the top 10. He's number 3.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. People who tell me they're reading that Hillary book is it's just too full of horse manure. But anyway, I wanted to straighten out Walt on this Common Core. You know, I don't know whether anybody's read anything about Polutkov, but here's a guy that doesn't want the SBAC test, says we're going to have to pour millions more dollars into curricula for Common Core. If you think you're going to get that through the legislature, you got to know the thought coming if he ever gets in. That would be a total crime, and I told him when we were actually talking with the representatives, you need to put literally millions more dollars into this if you're going to do it the way the government says you have to. We don't have the money, and we don't want the SBAC test or the longitudinal testing. So I do think that, again, if we do get a new committee chairman in the Senate, that we could take this down to the floor for debate. If we get it to the floor for debate, there's a good chance we can get it out of our system.
Depends if the governor, whoever it is, would sign it.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't have a governor. The governor does not have to sign it. It's a legislative rule.
Don't you have to, what, to repeal it?
No, sir. It is not a bill. It is a legislative rule, which means all you need to do is to have a House Senate vote.
Well, you've worked with those people. Good luck with that.
Well, I think there's a good chance. There's not a lot of people that really want it here. And I think they learned enough about it over the last 6 to 8 months that they can see that it's going to be damaging to our education.
I think it's going to be a fascinating race. You have Mr. Belukoff, who's reached out to Ray Amaya. We're feverishly trying to get him when he comes back from Alaska. Whether what he says, if there is otter fatigue, you have the fallout over the convention, and you have the power of the education lobby all coalescing against a guy who is really own the state of Idaho politically since 1972.
Well, we're going to sit down and talk with Mr. Belukoff the end of July.
Wait a minute. I'm not talking about you talking to Belukoff. I'm talking about us talking to Belukoff. Why do you always have to scoop me?
I don't know.
You know, I got Big Ed going, hey, guy, and I got Scoop Tea Party Bob.
I tell you, I can't wait for Big Ed to come out here. 500 feet, man, he better have some rocket on that thing.
Well, we'll have a rocket with you on Saturday morning.
You have a great day. Love you, brother.
Love you, our great friend, Tea Party Bob, Gem State Patriot. Let's get you to traffic, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's try and jam this in quickly. This is from Jim Jordan yesterday concerning the House of Representatives and the IRS.
The chairman asked you, who told you this information? You can't remember?
No, I do not remember.
Was it? Did someone tell you in person? Did they send you an email? How did you get the information?
I don't recall. I do not get emails on these subjects, so I'm sure it was someone in person.
This has been a major news story for the last 13 months, and you don't remember who came up to you and said, "Hey, boss, we lost Lois Lerner's emails." You don't even remember anything about that situation.
No, I remember being told in April.
But you don't remember who told you?
I do not recall who told
me. Something that's been a front page story for you would think that would be significant enough to remember how it happened, when they told you, what the actual date was.
Got to remember.
You might even remember where you were standing.
Remember, I'm running an agency with 90,000 people.
And this has been the biggest issue in front of your agency for the last year.
We're in the middle of filing season as well.
Okay, so here we go. So you find out sometime in April, you don't know who told you. What did you do then?
I was advised, I didn't do anything, I was advised that they were reconstituting as many emails as they could from other...
No. Who'd you tell? Did you tell the White House?
I never told the White House.
Politico reports you told the White House in April. You didn't tell anyone at the White House?
I don't think that's what Politico reported.
Did you tell anyone at Treasury? Did you tell any of your bosses?
I did not tell anybody at Treasury either.
Did you talk to anyone about this?
No.
Talk to anyone outside the agency about when...
Not outside the agency. I talked in the agency about it.
And then when did you tell Congress?
Pardon?
When did you tell Congress?
We produced the public report 10 days ago.
So you knew in April, and you waited 2 months to tell this body. The body
Correct.
Has been looking into this. Why'd you wait so long?
Because we actually were going to wait until we produced all of Lois Lerner's emails. Reviewed all the concerns.
You can't give us all her emails. You done lost some. So don't give me that statement.
Can I give you an answer?
I want to know why you didn't tell us you had lost some of her emails, because that's what we care about.
Can I give you the answer?
Sure.
All right. Our program was to complete the production of all Lois Lerner emails, complete the review of all custodians, and
provide a complete report. But it's kind of important, Mr. Commissioner, to tell us when you lost emails for the person that we're focused on, don't you think? Let me ask you a more important question. Did you tell the Justice Department?
No.
Why not? There's a criminal investigation going on. Don't you think that's a pertinent fact that they'd like to know?
We have no evidence that there's any criminal violation involved.
I didn't ask you that. There's a criminal... The President of the United States said on May 15th, we got to get to the bottom of this. The Attorney General said, we're going to do everything we can to find out what happened here. And you have information. You still have... Have you talked to the FBI at all?
I have never talked to the FBI about it.
Don't you think it's incumbent upon the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service when he gets a... Think about this. Think about the average citizen out there. FBI's investigating some citizen, and they lose documents over a two-year time period that are crucial, critical to the investigation, and they say, you know what, we're not going to tell the FBI. And then the FBI learns later. Do you think that person's in trouble? Heck yeah, they are. But you as the committee, you say, I don't need to tell anybody. You didn't tell them. Did you tell the Inspector General?
We issued a public report.
No. Back in April. You told us just a few minutes ago you learned in April.
In April.
Did you tell the Inspector General in April that you lost Lois Lerner's emails?
No, because we didn't know whether we'd lost any.
Here's what I'd like to know.
Okay.
If you waited 2 months to tell anyone, at what point does it become obstruction of justice? 3 months? 4 months? 2 weeks? When you got that kind of critical information, you're saying, you know, I'm going to hang on to this. We got to wait and make sure we can spin this better, do that. Whatever it was, the fact that you didn't tell us, and we've been after this for 13 months. We subpoenaed 6 months ago for this. You had a hearing on the 26th where everyone on this dais went after you and said, we want all the emails, and you assured us you'd get them all to us. And then you learn you can't, and you don't tell anybody. And you give us a report that you sent to Senator Hatch and Senator Wyden, and on page 9 of some report you say, oh, by the way,
actually,
we lost the emails.
That starts on page 5. It's half of the 7-page
Page report. 5! Imagine, I'd like for you to tell us. Not send us in some 37-page document on page 5 on a Friday afternoon, for goodness sake.
It's a 7-page document.
7-page document on page 5. This is ridiculous, Mr. Chairman, that we did not know this when he first knew, and that he almost knew everything on the 26th and wouldn't tell us. He wouldn't tell us the computer crashed, wouldn't tell us we think we might have lost them all. We're not quite sure. We're 99% sure, and he wouldn't tell us, and then waits 2 months before he does.
Those folks in Ohio sure talk fast. That is Congressman from Ohio, basically Jim Jordan laying the smackdown. Kevin Miller with you here at 580KIDO, and one of the, again, props to us, the reason why Congress has this stuff is from our friends at Judicial Watch, Chris Farrell, who got these documents released, and the reluctance of the IRS to tell the truth. Thank goodness that Congress is doing something. But do you hear the arrogance of the IRS commissioner? He knows he's not in trouble because Eric Holder and the president aren't going to do anything about it. Are we in a constitutional crisis here? Do you feel it? Americans like Becky Gerritsen, who in fact was on our show yesterday, given the once-over by the Internal Revenue Service for their religious and political beliefs, that there should be 0 tolerance for that in America. 580 KIDO traffic. Good morning, Dave. 8:59, Kevin Miller in the morning. Boy, if you missed any of the program today, make sure you podcast it. Ed Klein, Nagmeet Abedini, Big Ed Beckley, plus the IRS, plus the smoking ban, possibly going into Garden City, the roundabout and Eagle. Who covers those topics but you? And Common Core and Walt and Papa John's. All right. 70 degrees in Emmett. Have a great day. Do appreciate listening. Please tell more people. We need you, folks. If not, we're not going to be around. That's the truth. Good day. God bless. Keep
serving Emmett.